Hey, John.
Hey, Nick.
I invented a brand new card game. Are you ready for it?
Sure.
It's exactly like Solitaire, but it's mixed with a Houdini escape act where you have to get out of handcuffs, and it's called Solitary Confinement.
You know what?
Yeah.
That wasn't bad for as awful as this is going to be.
And, of course, that means it's Stranger Still. This is Stranger Still. Welcome to Stranger Still. My name is Nick Wood.
And I'm John Vegan.
And this is a podcast where we
answer the strange questions you never thought to ask. I'm John Vegan.
We already said our names. What are we talking about today, John?
Something fun and light. We figured we live in a very kind of like awful planet, awful world. The political climate isn't so great. So we thought we would lighten things up with a little bit of Solitaire.
John, you forgot to keep reading my notes here.
Okay, Solitary Confinement.
It's a little bit different.
Well, the world is nothing but evil and darkness.
Well, hopefully you're nice and relaxed for this episode, because it's going to be a little dark. So hopefully you took a moment to center yourself, meditate, and relax for this episode.
Yeah, I did. I did, actually. I went to a little floaty tank.
Yeah, and was it a sensory deprivation chamber?
I did go to a sensory deprivation chamber. Sensory deprivation.
What was that? Can you tell our audience what that was like?
Yeah.
I would never do that.
Yeah, you wouldn't. So it's basically just meditation.
Yeah.
But you're not touching anything and you can't see anything or hear anything or smell anything.
And you're just floating in salt water.
It feels like you're in space. It literally feels like you're just floating in space for an hour.
I would maybe do it just to see if it feels like what you describe.
It's really cool.
Like feeling floating in space.
Yeah. I would never pay full price for it.
Thankfully, there's this thing called Groupon out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is great. It was really fun. Like, I would do it again if there was another Groupon, for real.
And you were in there for how long?
I was in there for an hour and a half. And I'm sorry. And so the first 10 minutes, they play music, right? And they start playing the music, and it's like...
Was it Evanescence?
No, actually, it was Dr. Jeffrey Thompson, and I knew that without asking them, because I recognized the song.
Yeah?
So I used to listen to it growing up. He has a song called... He has an album that basically just helps you fall asleep.
Oh. Okay.
And I trained my brain to, like, get tired when I hear it, and I've listened to that song, like, 800 times a year.
Weird.
Falling asleep. Yeah.
Interesting.
And then, so the music goes on for 10 minutes, fades out, then silence and nothing. And the only thing that you feel every once in a while is like you kind of bump up against the side of the wall. Yeah. And then you got to push yourself back into the middle, which is a fun game. And then at the end, 5 minutes of music play again.
Yeah.
And you get out and it kind of like, I was like, this isn't doing anything. But if you don't think about it and you just kind of sit there and try to think about nothing, you feel pretty good after.
Yeah. I don't think I'd be left alone with my thoughts for an hour and a half.
That's the first 20 minutes. I was like, okay, meditate. God damn it, John, meditate.
Yeah. So at the end of it, you're only in there for an hour and a half, but did you start hallucinating?
No, but a lot of people did. I guess the only thing that I kind of thought that I saw was I'd see, like, it looked like a really far away little tiny red dot.
Yeah.
Every once in a while it would show up.
Huh.
But it was on this field of vision, whereas, like, you know when you push on your eyes when they're closed and you start seeing little fuzzies floating around? It was something like that.
Like that?
Yeah. But there's a whole book of, like, people that hallucinate in the lobby. They had this book of art that was inspired by it.
Really?
But, which was really cool, because whatever, do your thing.
Yeah.
I didn't see that. Maybe I didn't meditate good enough.
You're not good enough at the meditation game.
But I went pretty nuts for the first, like, before I relaxed and, like, accepted it. It was pretty hellish for the first 10, 20 minutes. Like, I mean, it was relaxed and I knew I could get out, but I knew what our topic was going to be today. And I kind of had that in the back of my mind thinking, I cannot believe that people could do this for a long time.
Well, they can't do it.
Yeah.
Which is the problem. Now, did you experience any overt paranoia?
No. See?
Or diminished impulse control?
No.
Or PTSD?
Nope.
Just the
opposite, because I knew I could get out.
Yeah. Would you believe it that sometimes we put prisoners in solitary confinement, similar to the situation you're in, except they're not in salt water. They're in, like, a cement cube with a bed and a sink and a toilet and maybe a light, probably a light, no guarantee.
Yeah.
For, like, 22 to 24 hours a day. And surprisingly, they do experience those symptoms after prolonged exposure.
Yeah, I would think. I couldn't
be. No exposure.
I just couldn't imagine the trauma of being put in the situation that I was if it was against my will.
Yeah. So, in your mind, how would you define solitary confinement?
How would I define it?
Like, from an outsider's perspective, what's your understanding of solitary confinement?
From what I understand, we have a prison system that's broken.
Well, yeah.
And one of the torturous practices that they do is they take prisoners who are misbehaving or they don't like them for whatever reason, and they put them away from all human contact other than the people that kind of live there or work there for an extended amount of time. And the idea behind it is that it'll help calm them down and put them in the corner and punish them and tell them, like, when you're ready to be good, you can come back. But what it really does is make things a lot worse.
Yeah, so it's used mostly in prisons, and I think a little bit, I don't think it's used so much in mental health facilities as much as it used to be, like the padded cells and stuff. I think that's kind of gone by the wayside. But like you said, it's where correctional officers or whoever will put violent or unruly or people that they just don't like in a confined space. And pretty much the only interaction they have is with a little slot at the bottom of their door where food comes through.
Yeah.
They're cut off from the rest of the establishment and they can't leave. It, like I said before, many of the people are kept in there for 22 to 24 hours a day. Sometimes they'll get 1 or 2 hours of reprieve where they can go outside for a little bit, because that's supposedly supposed to make them heal better, feel better, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Basically, they're treating the prisoners or the mental patients like animals, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Just to put it bluntly. Today, I found a study.
But you shouldn't treat animals like that, though, either.
Right. Well, that's, I mean, yes. But I like going to the zoo.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. I went to the Minnesota Zoo.
Uh-huh.
And this year they brought in kangaroos. And those kangaroos are just like out in this open field where people can walk through. They're like not really kept in captivity. They have this entire area to explore and you can walk through. There's nothing separating you from the kangaroos. And it's like the coolest thing ever. And I realized that kangaroos are like the most human-like animal I've ever seen. Even more than monkeys, because they're just like laying there chilling on their elbow like this. In the shade, like resting their hand on their arm. Like they're just like chilling. It was so cool.
So that's cool. Yeah.
But there's not so good zoos. Yes, you're right.
I mean, I didn't even allude to that. I was just talking about, like, putting your pet in a cage. But, okay, let's open that can of worms.
I thought we were getting into zoos. So, in today's world, I found a study that...
Also, don't keep worms in a can. That's terrible, too.
Really?
Yeah, do you keep worms in a can?
I don't
open
keep
up
worms.
A can of worms? Yeah, me neither.
I usually, when I go fishing, I use fake lures and
vegan
fake
juice. Yeah, vegan bait.
Yeah, and usually I do catch and release, so...
Right.
I don't even remember the last time I've not caught and released a fish.
Me neither.
Well, for you, it's a different reason.
Yeah.
Anyway, in today's world, I found a study that said in 2014, in American prisons alone, 80,000 to 100,000 people were kept in solitary confinement at some point during the year. So unfortunately, solitary confinement is still very much in use today. And there was a period where it started to fade away. And it unfortunately came rearing back and it's in full force, which is really disappointing. You'd think that we'd have better ways of treating people. And now on the news, you hear all these stories of police brutality of mental health patients or people in prisons that have mental health issues that they're just abusing because they don't have the treatment or the training to treat these people.
Right.
So they continue treating them like animals or worse than animals.
Sure. Like Dr. Sheriff Clark, who had an inmate die of thirst under his care.
I couldn't remember if he was the one that died of thirst or the one that died from the...
Burns?
The burns, yeah.
No, it's the thirst. And also
job.
The woman who had a baby and they wouldn't help her.
Yeah. Good, great job, guys. And there's an article that we'll talk about later, but it seems like this is a very generalized statement, so don't take it out of context or hold me to it, but it seems like a lot of the problems that we have in the world today just come down to inadequate training.
Yeah.
It's really disappointing.
Yeah.
And I feel like that, and this is maybe a little bit more political than we like to get, but I feel like that just comes down to funding, because you can't fund your police department enough to train them how to deal with violent inmates or mentally incapable inmates, so they just abuse them because they don't know any other way to keep people in line. And probably they were treated like that when they were younger, or they've seen people treat people like that, so that's just what's normal to them. Anyway.
Yeah, no, I'd like to get political. You know I do.
No, I don't get political.
No, as far as, I don't know the deal with, I know in Utah, they did do, like, better training to deal mm-hmm. with people and put space between you and someone, and it's called Giving Ground, and they killed zero people for, like, 3 or 4 years now.
Good. Good job, Utah.
Yeah.
Let's move to Utah. Which right? is far way away from ye old Philadelphia, where our story begins. How's that segue?
Look at that. States.
Right? It's a connecting tissue of the United States or something. So if you had to guess how far back solitary confinement went in the prison system, how far back would you say it goes? Give me a year.
A year. I'm going to go BC.
Yeah?
I'm going to go BC.
Okay.
I'm going to say, like, Pliny the Elder and all those fellows probably did some
probably.
Of that.
You might not be wrong. Modern solitary confinement comes to us from the year 1829, and their reasoning took place in BC times. If I were to say there was a religious group in Philadelphia that was responsible for the start of solitary confinement in the prison systems, which group would you say it was?
Wow, what a bunch of loaded questions there.
It's very Yeesh. Specific.
It's going to be the Evangelicals, if I'm going
to
guess.
Well, it's the predecessors to the Evangelicals, the Quakers.
Okay. All right. Look
so, when just remember, whenever you're eating your Quaker Oats oatmeal, they invented solitary confinement as it's used today.
Which is actually consumed in solitary confinement very often.
Yeah. So, full
conspiracy.
Circle. It goes deep.
Let's put people in cells so they'll eat more oatmeal.
This conspiracy goes deep, just like the holes that they'll put their inmates in. Like that joke?
No.
Okay. So there's a group, if anyone doesn't know, the Quakers are a group of Protestant Christians that were mostly in the New England area. Very strict to the Bible, sort of like our evangelical Christians today. They got this idea from the Bible, so BC times, mm-hmm. that if a prisoner was left in like a brick or stone room, they would spend the time repenting to God and ultimately reconsidering their lives and come out good. They'd lose all of their wrongdoings and their evil, and they'd be a good person. So they thought, well, let's give it a shot. It's in the Bible. We may as well give it a shot, right?
Yeah.
And they quickly learned, even back then, that after people went into solitary confinement, they'd go mostly insane and were at a higher risk of suicide or were socially inept afterwards. They had a harder time just, even in the prison system, they had a harder time getting back into the social, what do you want to call it? The social climate there, whatever yeah. you want to call it. They had a trouble getting reacquainted in an environment even as, I don't want to say primitive, but primitive as the prison system.
Yeah.
Where you don't have to be nice to people.
No.
You just got to talk to them, and that's interacting. They couldn't even do that. Anyway. Luckily, since people noticed this, solitary confinement kind of dwindled out for the decades to come until the year 1934, more than 100 years later. Can you take a wild guess as to what opened up in 1934?
Can you put a drum roll? Okay. Rikers Island?
No. Close.
Alcatraz?
Yeah, Alcatraz! one first try.
One and done.
One and done.
Well, I guessed once, and then the second one was the one that was done, because I got it right.
Yeah.
One and done.
So, first try. I was just going to let us lie together, but whatever.
First try. Editing, right?
Editing, right? People are just going to think that was a bad edit. Anyway, whatever. Anyway, for people that don't know, Alcatraz was a prison on an island where we would put the worst of our worst criminals at the time. As a result, we as a society didn't really care how the inmates were treated for the most part. There was a large percentage of an entire block of Alcatraz, cell block D, and there's a percentage of that was just solitary confinement.
Yeah. They'd
call it the solitary confinement hallway, which sounds awful.
Yeah.
It's a hallway, so it's like open, right?
Sure.
I don't know. It right wasn't open.
The world is black and white, and people are good or bad. That's how yes. they thought.
Right. So treat them like you want to treat bad people.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of Block or D Block?
Yeah.
The only reason I've heard of it is because it's supposedly the most haunted part of Alcatraz. Mm. And I feel like that, if it is haunted, I'm not going to speak one way or another to hauntings. It's probably a result of putting people in solitary confinement, driving them insane, and then they would kill themselves.
Yeah.
And then they'd haunt D Block.
Yeah, or, I mean, someone made it up.
That's also possible. If it is, if it is not true, it is made up.
I learn something new every day on this podcast.
You're welcome. Yeah, they also had a thing called The Hole. Can you take a wild guess as to what that was?
Okay. In order to have a hole, you have to have some kind of like a surface.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say that there was like brick or cement or something like that. And then in the middle of that area, you take a bunch of it out.
Oh, okay. Yep.
And then you put a little prisoner in there.
Yeah. See, I wasn't able to find that definition on the articles that I looked at, but yeah, that explains a lot.
Lying news media. Yeah. Typical.
Fake news. So it was just a hole in the ground. It was concrete on all sides. They just stick people down there and cover it up. Good stuff. We treated them really nicely.
How'd you breathe?
I mean, it's not airtight.
Oh, you keep it open often enough so that the air can get trapped in there with them.
Right.
Okay. Gotta let the air in first.
Right. Since then, solitary confinement has made a sort of resurgence, at least in American prisons. I don't know about outside the United States.
I wish I knew what the outside of the United States was like.
Yeah. If only there was something to connect us with the outside world.
Yeah.
Like some sort of web.
Like a spider.
Like crossed over the world.
Like, yeah, like a spider
like
that
could
tell us.
A worldwide web or something like that.
Oh. Or a spider.
Yeah.
That could tell us secrets.
You're just going on that bit. Just hammer it through. Anyway, there aren't a lot of studies done on solitary confinement and the effects that it has on the brains, mostly because they'd have to experiment on humans to do that, and that's bad. There have been a few experiments done on animals, which I'm sure you're not a fan of, but, I mean, the alternative is humans, right? So, which one's really the worst one?
It's all bad, man.
I mean...
And it's not that you're saying I'm not a fan of it, but, like, you are.
Yeah. Well... Yeah, and even the study done was like, well, duh. So here's the study that was done on rhesus monkeys. They put them in like a pit, and they were separated from everyone. And surprise, surprise, when they realized they couldn't get out, they just kind of slumped in a corner and just sat there for a while. After some time, I didn't get a time frame for it, they would start causing self-harm. They would just like start mutilating themselves, their flesh and stuff. And then they'd just kind of sit there and rock back and forth in like that stereotypical insane person rock, you know?
Yeah.
And just stare off into space. These are monkeys doing that, which is
pretty bad.
For me, that's a lot creepier than a person doing that. I don't know why. I guess it's because I perceive that as like a human behavior. So when that is afflicted onto an animal, it's like, that's messed up.
Yeah, I guess so. It's kind of like the opposite of when you see a monkey smoking and it's almost cute. But then you're like, no,
either.
Don't do that. Don't do that, monkey. Monkeys don't know about lung cancer.
Poor guy.
That's not fair either. Okay, how about when they dance and stuff? But it's by will.
Right.
Like they're paid.
Right. You give them a tip.
Yeah.
And they do a little dance.
Right.
It's a little bit better. I mean, that's...
Man, can monkeys do anything and I feel good about it?
Live independent lives in their natural habitat.
That's pretty good.
That's a pretty good one.
I'd open bananas say. The right way, which is against the stem, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks,
is that
monkeys.
A myth? I feel like that's a myth.
Maybe I'll cover that.
on Stranger Minute?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's your next episode. After they left the monkeys in there for 12 months, apparently. I don't know how many they left in there, but 12 months later, they reintroduced them into society, and they were completely unable to function normally in a social circle. Like, they just couldn't cope. There was also another study conducted by a college on volunteer grad students. They're all male. I don't know if that makes a difference, but it's worth pointing out. It's sort of adjacent to what we're talking about. It's not directly related, but I think it's worth mentioning because they took these subjects, they put them in some sort of solitary confinement room, much like what you'd find in the prison system. But they also wanted to take away their senses, so it was like a sensory deprivation as well. So they put goggles on them to limit their sight. They put earmuffs on them to limit their hearing, even though there wasn't much to hear. And then they put gloves on them to limit their sense of touch. And the study was supposed to go on for 6 weeks. Can you guess how long it lasted?
6 hours.
It was longer than that. They made it the longest anyone went was 7 days.
Wow.
And
they probably looked really not creepy, too.
Right. They weren't. They probably still have PTSD about it. What's interesting is that they said they couldn't last. Some of them said they couldn't last after that time because they could no longer think clearly. Like, they just couldn't think straight for any solid period of time. Just, like, the opposite of that sensory deprivation chamber you went into.
Well, if I was doing that for a week straight, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But then I also wonder if, like, what's weird about the positive effects that I had while being there mm-hmm. versus the negative effects that people have by being forced in there, besides the fact that they're forced to do it, is, yeah, you immediately, like, the second that you don't have constant stimulus mm-hmm. all the time, you just start thinking and thinking and thinking and thinking, and you can't stop. And then you start thinking about how you can't stop thinking, and it's just the worst.
It just snowballs in your brain.
Right, and eventually you're kind of like, the way you're supposed to meditate is you just notice yourself thinking,
mm-hmm.
and you just kind of let it go. Mm-hmm. You have a thought, you let it go. So I wonder, like, I wonder the differences between this and that.
These guys were all volunteers, too. So, I mean, it's not like they went into it being like, oh, I don't want to do this. Like, they volunteered for it, which maybe that's why they lasted as long as they did. But even knowing what you're going into it, another symptom that they had, obviously they started to hallucinate. Pretty much anyone that's left alone for a long time, that's why you get, like, cabin fever and stuff.
Yeah, your brain can't handle no stimulus, so it starts creating its own.
Exactly. And maybe we'll do an episode on that, because that's... I really want to talk about hallucinations.
Yeah.
But one guy apparently just saw nothing but dogs everywhere.
That's great. That's me. That's me at home.
It's just like dogs everywhere. And then another guy could only see eyeglasses everywhere.
Mm.
That's just... Brains are weird, man. Brains are just bizarre to me. But I love them. Psychology's really fun.
That's just your brain telling you to think that.
That's true. It's a conspiracy. My brain's basically the Illuminati of my body. Put that on a bumper sticker. But we're talking about prisoners, so we can also have studies done on observations of prisoners. We don't have to experiment on them, but we can observe the effects that solitary confinement has on them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not unethical, because they're already in prison, and people were putting them in solitary confinement anyway. I mean, that's unethical. That's not what I'm trying to say. You know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Sure. Crack a few eggs.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying.
That came out really wrong. It's just a few bad guys. No. I'm just saying that our prison system is already so broke, these people are going to go into solitary confinement anyway, right?
Right.
So just observe them. Wow. Dig yourself out of this hole.
Yeah, good luck, bud. I'm going to be up here outside of this hole.
Can you throw me some food or something?
Yeah, how about some Quaker Oats?
Full circle. So anyway, I did talk about the Quakers before. They noticed that there's increased suicide in people that were put in solitary confinement. They also obviously noticed that it was harder interacting socially. There's a study done between the years of 1999 and 2004, so a five-year study, that said solitary confinement resulted in half of all prison suicides. That's nuts.
Yeah.
Even staggeringer is there's a study done for the year of 1995 that said 63% of all prisoners that were put in solitary confinement committed suicide. So more than half of the people that were forced into solitary confinement committed suicide. Obviously, I don't know how long they were in solitary confinement, or if they were ever let out for like an hour or two a day or whatever. I don't have that information, but 63%.
I have a theory on it.
Go for it.
And it's just totally made up off the top of my head.
That's fine.
But...
wax poetry to me, man.
Yeah, dude. So here's the deal. I think that you hear that statistic and you're like, wow, that's a lot. That's nuts. That's craziness. And then how could it be so bad just to sit in a room that you're going to want to kill yourself?
Try doing it yourself, people.
But no, don't do that.
Oh.
When you're in that room.
Hang on. I need to dig myself out of that hole real fast. I'm not saying sit in a room and kill yourself. I'm saying try sitting in a room by yourself for 23 hours.
No, it's saying don't do that. Don't sit in a room for 23 hours.
If you think it's not hard, then I think they should.
But my
it's awful. It's not a good experience. And if you're like out there and you're like, it's not that bad, try it. You need to try it.
Yeah, first 20 minutes, you'll get pretty upset.
Yeah.
So I would think that this treatment causes depression.
Yeah.
And I think that depression coincides with suicide.
Yes.
And I think that if you make that little bridge gap, boom, boom.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's making them commit suicide, is it's an increased rate of depression, and they just get more hopelessness. Even if they're not actively thinking, oh, it's so bad being in that room, even if they get free and they're out of prison, mm-hmm. they probably have a higher depression rate.
There's a lot of things that can come out of being in solitary confinement that lead to suicide. Like, obviously, self-mutilation probably just comes from not being able to get out of your own head.
Yeah.
Or maybe the hallucinations. It gets really weird, though. Found a lot of stuff from an article on PBS and AFSC.org. They seem to be in the business of getting rid of solitary confinement, which mm-hmm. I'm okay with. So it can lead to panic attacks. It can lead to, like I said before, overt paranoia, diminished impulse control, which should make you more violent, which is doing the opposite of what you are putting people in there in the first place to get them to stop doing.
Right.
It can give people a hypersensitivity to noise and touch. So if there's a loud noise, they're going to be more jumpy and more reactive, thinking that they're in danger. Or even if you just like put your hand on their shoulder, that's too much stimulus for them now. They can develop uncontrollable feelings of rage and fear. Once again, makes them more violent. Distortions of time. Like, they might not even know how long they're in there.
Yeah.
It can develop PTSD in these guys and gals. Difficulties in thinking, obviously. Concentration and memory. Some inmates lose the ability to maintain a sense of alertness. So they're just, like, lethargic permanently. And one thing that I thought was really strange was they can develop crippling obsessions, is what the article called it. An example, there's a quote in there, the PBS article, that said one inmate couldn't stop obsessing over the fact that he could never quite empty. It, like, he felt like his bladder was never quite empty. So this patient or this inmate would stand in front of the toilet for hours and hours a day just trying to pee.
Yeah.
After he went to solitary confinement. And there's another person.
So he's developed like an OCD almost.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like OCD on steroids. Which obviously, like, all of these things just make a person neurotic.
Yeah.
And if you're feeling paranoid, you feel like people are out to get you, that might cause you to commit suicide. A lot of these things are just going to lead to depression, especially like PTSD, or a lack of impulse control, panic attacks. That's going to all lead to depression. There's a lot of just weird things that you just want to get out of your head. So you take the only course of action that you have control over at that point.
Yeah.
So my question is, we put people, as a judicial system, we subject people to a lifetime of solitary confinement. That is part of our punishment for people's crimes in today's society, where in most cases with these guys, they do stay in there for 23 hours and then they get an hour of outside time. Is that justice for anything? Committing someone to this type of neuroticism?
So you're going to get people that say yes because they don't want to understand it. Mm-hmm. Or even if they say that they fully do, you're going to say, well, their crimes were this and that bad.
Mm-hmm.
For me, no way. Like, I mean, death penalty would be lighter.
Yeah.
By far.
Yeah, yeah. What point is the death penalty not as bad as solitary
confinement? But even then, like, I'm against the death penalty too. So,
but I would, as if I were faced with the death penalty or a lifetime of solitary confinement, 100% of the time I'd choose death penalty.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because you're stuck with all the, like, if you're in there for your lifetime, you're definitely getting all of these. You're getting hallucinations and you're getting PTSD and panic attacks, and you're not going to be able to talk to anyone for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Fun. I don't think anyone should be subject to that.
Right. But, and just to clarify on the death penalty thing, I don't remember the number off the top of my head, but mm-hmm. there is a decent percentage of people that are killed that are innocent.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're going to have even the capability to make a mistake like that, it makes it not worth it.
Right. Yeah. And luckily there are places out there that combat that sort of thing, like the Innocence Project.
Yep, yep.
For the death penalty.
And I was wondering if you had a version of that for solitary confinement.
That's what I was going to look up here. As near as I can tell, there's not like one organization that's out there that's like their one cause is to take down solitary confinement. There are a bunch of other places that it's a part of their mission, like ACLU. They've got a bunch of resources that you can campaign against solitary confinement. Like I said, the website before, afsc.org, has a bunch of resources on solitary confinement.
Mm-hmm.
There's one website here, socialworkersasc.org. Doesn't look like there's a lot of resources on here, but that might be a good place to start. I think solitary confinement is disgusting. That's my stance.
Cool.
That's my official Stranger Still stance.
Okay, so let me think about mine real quick.
Yeah, go for it.
No, it's bad.
It's not really hard to think about.
Yeah.
I didn't think I'd be this passionate about solitary confinement until I started researching it, and it's just, it's disgusting.
What made you
put anyone through
this?
What
made you pick this?
Oh, yeah, I should give credit. So, I don't even remember. One of my coworkers brought up, they're like, did you ever see the studies on solitary confinement and the psychological effects it has on people? And I'm like, no, but I want to.
Yeah.
Because I love psychology, and this is one of those things that I've just... This is part of the time when I come up with topics for the show, I'm like, I want to learn about that. John, yeah. Can we make an episode about that so that I can research it?
Yeah.
And that's kind of how this went. I was like, I want to learn
more about... I think 100%
of
the time we've just said, yeah.
Yeah.
Because we both feel that way about life.
Yeah. And in this case, I wanted to be able to speak to solitary confinement and learn more about it. And it kind of got me a lot more riled up than I thought it was going to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Do you want to recap?
Sure. We have prison systems.
Uh-huh.
And those prison systems have old ways of doing things. When you were in little one-room chapel room schoolhouses, people used to get, like, spanked and hit with boulders and stuff like that.
Or you get a dunce cap or something.
Or a dunce cap and, like, different ways to shame people.
You get segregated, yeah.
Right. And some of those practices are leftovers. Mm-hmm. And people kind of, like...
Doesn't mean that they're okay.
No. It's people just still believe that they work, and mm-hmm. they don't. And there could be study after study that shows that it does not.
Mm-hmm.
And, doesn't matter. There's a climate where people don't really listen to facts, and the only way to kind of fight that is to know your facts and to literally either like protest, campaign, like just fight against it. And one of the ways is by spreading knowledge, which is why it's crucial that you share this podcast on your favorite social media platform.
Get the word out there. Good plug.
Thank you.
John and on and on.
And on and on, Nathan.
Where can people find us?
StrangerStillShow.com.
And?
At StrangerStill on Twitter.
And?
StrangerStill on Facebook.
I got the easy job. I just say and.
Yeah.
You know what you should do, people? You know what you should do? Leave us a review on iTunes.
Yeah. Yep.
We're on our way to 2,000. Still only at 35.
We're getting there, though.
We're getting there. We're less than 1% of the way there, so mm-hmm. that's good.
Another
feels
thing.
Really nice.
I would like to talk about a little bit.
Yep.
Is I've been doing a weekly video series called Stranger Minute.
You have?
I have.
I haven't noticed.
Nick didn't see him, not in them, won't come to my house.
Yeah, smells like dogs.
He will be in the next couple of ones.
You're going to force me?
I just said it. It's official podcast rules.
Oh,
you're gonna
it's
be
canon
in,
now.
Yeah, you're going to be in an upcoming one mm-hmm. someday. But they can be on... I think it's just youtube.com/StrangerStill.
I don't think we have a URL yet.
We don't have a URL yet.
Subscribers, so go subscribe.
Yeah, go subscribe to us. If you go to StrangerStillShow.com, you can click the YouTube icon. Mm-hmm. It'll yep. bring it to our page.
That's
and they're basically, way. They're a minute long, and I just talk about a topic.
They're exactly 60 seconds.
Yeah.
So I would be on your Stranger Minute, but I'm a busy guy.
Oh.
And I've got a new podcast coming up, John,
okay.
that I'd like to tell our listeners about. It's going to be up on August 14th. First episode's going up. It's my birthday.
Heck yeah.
So it's my way of celebrating. I teased it last time. I'll talk a little bit about it more because Josh called it
boring.
Can
you do it in that like breathing out voice the whole time?
Yeah. It's a podcast where I sit down with my dad and we're going to watch every single different cartoon that Hanna-Barbera released. We're not going to watch every episode, but we're going to sit down and we watch from beginning to end. Like, it goes Rough and Ready, Huckleberry Hound, Quickjaw McGraw, Flintstones, which might sound boring. I've told a couple people about this concept, and they're like, I don't think I'm going to listen to that. But if you like dad jokes, or you like cartoons, or cartoon history, or just hanging out with me and my dad.
Can I give you a 20-second pitch?
Yeah.
Okay. Hi, this is John. You guys probably have heard of Nick Wood before.
Uh-huh.
He is really good at dad jokes.
Yeah.
If you want to find out how he got that way, listen to him talk to his actual dad.
My actual dad.
It's literally two dads. One is the dad of the other dad, and the other is the dad to a cute little baby named Rory.
Yeah.
And the jokes will fly.
It's generations of cartoon watching. So
mm-hmm.
I will say we just recorded last night our fourth episode, and I feel like we finally hit our stride in that fourth episode. So like the first three episodes are just like a straight-laced
trailer.
Cartoon. Well, it's like a cartoon history. Just like pretty straight laced. And then Flintstones is really fun. So listen to those and I'll thank you forever. I forgot to say the name of it. John, how could you let me do that? It's called Limited Cell.
Uh-huh.
And you can go to limitedcell.com.
Why is it called Limited Cell?
Oh, man, we're going to get into that. Maybe we should do a whole episode of Stranger Still to promote my new podcast.
That is the way they made the cartoons back then.
Yeah, there's this thing that William Hanna and Joseph Barbera really pioneered called limited animation, limited frame animation, limited cell animation, whatever you want to call it, where to cheaply produce cartoons, they would only draw the parts of the cartoon that needed to be changed. So if someone was talking, they would just draw the mouth. If they were running, they would only draw the legs moving. They would draw the upper body once and then draw the other frames for the legs moving, yeah. stuff like that.
It's like when you see a bookshelf and you could tell which one is going to make exactly. it move.
So Shelby, one day we were watching something and she's like, I bet you'll know this. How come whatever they're going to grab is always a different color than the background? Yeah. And I was like, well, because they would draw the background once, they'd paint it up, and then whatever they're going to interact with was drawn on cellophane and laying on top of it so that it was cheaper to animate. So they wouldn't have to draw the background new every time. They would just draw that one object moving with the character, and it was a heck of a lot cheaper.
Cool.
And these guys were like the main pioneers on it. And
they're amazing, except they're really bad at matching colors.
They're really bad at matching colors. And I'm going to say a bold statement. I don't feel like a lot of the cartoons that we have today would be around without them. There's limited animation was around before them, but it wasn't used to the extent to make as wide of a breadth of cartoons that these guys made in the time that they did it. So, like, I was watching some stupid show that my nephew was, I think it was Teen Titans Go, and I noticed just a semblance of limited cell animation, and I was like, Hanna-Barbera, you're welcome.
Nice. So that's gonna be August 14th.
Yeah, and then every Monday after that. So
cool.
It's gonna be a good time.
So now we got Monday's Limited Cell, Wednesday Stranger Still, Thursday Stranger Minute.
So we got to find something to fill in Tuesdays and Fridays.
Yep. So if you want to start a podcast, you can go to StrangerStillShow.com.
Just email us podcast at StrangerStillShow.com. Yep.
But only we're in it. It's just your idea and money.
Yeah. And we take all your money and run away. Thank you.
I'm still John.
I'm still Nick.
And this has been
Stranger Still.